Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And today's guest is John Pazes, who is the founder and director of Performing Arts Studio West, a remarkable acting studio, acting classes. What do you call it overall?
Well, it's kind of a multidimensional acting and performing studio.
Uh-huh. Where people come for classes.
Absolutely.
And perform.
Yes. Okay. We offer classes taught by entertainment industry professionals in the areas of acting, music, dance, and some technical aspects of the industry also.
And can we just talk about you?
Sure.
To first start, what's your background in acting and performing, and what was it you did before you did this?
Right. Well, I started off acting as a kid, just through high school and college. And then at age 19, I went to New York and studied professionally. I worked, fortunate enough to work with Sandy Meisner at the Neighborhood Playhouse School of Theater. And that brought me back and forth between New York and the Chicago area and California for many years. I was also for maybe about 7 years in different incarnations of rock and roll bands. I was a dancer and wound up coming to Los Angeles in 1980 in a rock band with my younger brother that we had for five years.
Can we hear the name of it?
Yeah, we were originally called Kid Twist, and we evolved into World Affairs. And so we had a minimal amount of success in the early 1980s. And during that period of time, from when I moved to LA in 1980, my day job was working in social services.
Oh, I see.
So
okay.
I was working as
what aspect?
I started off as a classroom instructor in an adult day program for autistic individuals. So I had a group.
Did you come upon that kind of accidentally?
My mom was a special education teacher.
Okay, so you knew about this.
So I did know about that, and I did some work as a young person, you know, during the summers, you know, working with my mom and people in the public schools, and I did a year as a teacher's aide.
Okay, so that was all natural to you to make this transition.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I was with a large talent management agency for 17 years. I wound up the associate director there. And
What kind of talent management?
Did I say talent management? Yeah. I meant behavior management.
Oh, okay.
Okay, a behavior management day program. Right. It also had a residential component to it and a non-public
school. Functional behavior is a talent.
That's true.
I mean, so,
that's
true. My goodness. Okay, so go ahead.
So did that for 17 years while I was in the band, while I was pursuing acting. You know, I did some voiceover work and some puppeteering, a lot of stuff in the industry. And that closed in 1997. And so I found myself at 44 years old, unemployed. And I said, geez, what can I do? You know, what do I know how to
do? Unemployed, but with a huge background.
And I had to find something to, you know, very, very quickly. I was, you know, on unemployment for 6 months, and I said, God, what can I try to put together? So, actually shortly after the industry the agency closed, I put together a proposal for what is now Performing Arts Studio West, and I went to our funding source and I said, I would like to create.
Now, how did you know what a funding source? I mean, I'm just curious.
Because I had been working all these types of day programs.
Oh, so you knew that there were funding sources and something you could go. Okay,
absolutely. We're a state funded program.
Okay.
Through the Department of Developmental Services.
Okay.
So that's where the money comes from, and we're paid like a school, you know, per person per day.
That's why
we take roll. Oh, yeah, okay. We got to report back and we do our billing at the end of each month.
Also, I noticed also that taking roll, it was really kind of moving. Taking roll kind of acknowledges the importance of each person in the class. I mean, it had a nice little side effect.
It's a really nice way to, and you can see it's this kind of free flowing, it has a life of itself in the morning, and it really kicks off our day. And I try to start the day off with humor, and I try to start.
Well, you started off with enormous welcoming in that one act, I thought. But anyway, okay, go back to you.
Okay. So put a proposal together. Opened up in a very small storefront area.
So you put a proposal. You get somebody says yes, we'll fund you, and then you get a storefront. You sign the rental papers. I'm just people are really interested in the actual specific details of how something gets done.
And you know, actually, the building that we started off in was one of five buildings that the behavior management agency that I used to work for was occupying. So I had actually worked in that very building for 7 years or
so
something.
So this all makes sense.
So when I was looking for a space, I was trolling through the neighborhood here, and I said, yeah, maybe this space is still unoccupied.
Okay, so what happens next? You have the space, and then you put the word out that you are welcoming people who want to study acting.
Exactly. Adults with developmental disabilities who are interested in the entertainment industry or interested in exploring their talents, either in acting, music, or dance. Mm-hmm. And when we started out, I was really thinking, gosh, it would be nice just to get these guys trained, just to get them, you know, a little bit of experience to get them know what their talents might be, to explore those talents. And then maybe at some point we could evolve into, you know, getting them, you know, some background work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here we are almost 17 years later. Mm-hmm. Our guys have been cast in over 1,500 roles in film, in television, and commercials.
So what happened? You mentioned that you'd start off with 5 students.
And
then how did it blossom into this enormous 7,000 square foot, multifaceted acting school?
Let me see.
You don't say acting school, though. You say studio, right?
Yeah, we call it a studio. Call it a studio. And once we got these guys basic training, and I would do on-camera classes with them, and I was the only teacher at the beginning. It was just myself. So I was teaching acting, music, and dance classes. Mm-hmm. And then as we hit our 7th participant, we're a 1-to-6 ratio, which is something that is mandated by the state of California.
Oh.
I had to get another employee.
I
brought on another person. Then we could go
That's a big staff then for this many people, isn't it?
Yes, we have 12 people on staff now. On a daily basis, we have an average of about 60 people per day. On paper, we have 84. Some people are part-time, some people are full-time. Mm-hmm. So as we started to progress, we did a couple of small shows. We would go out to other day programs for adults with disabilities and perform for them. Mm-hmm. We'd go to senior citizen homes and programs and perform for them.
Oh, nice. You had a lot of actual performing experience.
Yeah. So that's how I was kind of, you know, grooming these guys to be able to be in front of an audience and, you know, be themselves and not be afraid and you know, have a little bit of, you know, legs under them as they move forward. And
was that a process? I mean, do most people come a little bit afraid and a little bit shy?
God. We had people that would cry when they were up on stage, you know, and not in the context.
I know that's common.
They would be so nervous that they would be shaking and crying.
Uh-huh.
And then you have other people coming in that are absolute hams.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking. You must have had that too. Yeah.
So it's being able to just, you know, groom everyone to what their specific talents were. Mm-hmm. We did one show very, very early on, which was a adaptation of a children's book called Mafaro's Beautiful Daughters. And that was the last show that we did that was not original. I found that we had so many talented, quirky actors and performers with us that I said, we got to start writing specifically
for them. Yes.
So the first show we wrote, which is an original musical comedy, was called The Ecstasy of Dogs, Sparks, and Giants. And what I did is we had 2 original songs in it, but I licensed a bunch of music from different eras that was all very, very odd. And it was a story about a woman with agoraphobia. She was afraid to leave her home. Mm. She was locked up in her apartment, and through this kind of through the looking glass experience that she has when she falls into a dream state, she then confronts herself. She sees herself on her television playing herself, playing her therapist. There's a knock on the door. There's a phone call. All these different characters come into her life. And through these experiences, which are all expressed through song, and it was a comedy. I mean, it sounds kind of dark, but it was a little dark. But it was also very, very funny.
Sure.
And so this woman discovers the strength once again to get out and experience herself in the real world.
Now, is this something people can see?
Yeah.
This
one was the last. Well, we shot our first few on VHS, so the quality is very, very poor as we have progressed over the years.
But can people find this on
I think we have clips from it on the website. But
you want to say your website?
Yes, it's P as in Paul, PAStudioWest.com.
Okay.
PAStudioWest.com.
Okay. So it'll be a fun place to go and just investigate.
Yeah,
and see
take
what's
the,
so
we
talk. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, please.
Well, I was just before you had said something about a lot of your members here have been cast in. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that? And what do casting directors come to you?
Yeah, we have access because we're licensed talent agents. Uh-huh. And okay. So we have our whole
management. So you're on the management list where people know to come.
We have our whole management department, so we access, you know, all the breakdowns. Mm-hmm. And we have a dedicated staff who works with our talent that is out there looking for work for them on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. You would ask kind of how this blossomed into this whole thing. Our first industry break was the show Seventh Heaven. That was on
it ran
for like 12 or 13 years. Yeah. And they were looking to cast five characters with developmental disabilities. Mm-hmm. And they had this wide open casting session. We found out about it. And so we submitted 10 guys for five roles. We went straight to producers. And they were thinking originally, well, maybe we'll cast one or two people who actually have a disability. And then mm-hmm. we'll fill in with actors without mm-hmm. disabilities to mm-hmm. play these characters. So we sent 10 people down, we booked all five roles, and they canceled 200 auditions
for
actors with
you.
Disabilities. Uh-huh. Yeah, we just nailed it. And so that kind of started off as, hey, look what we can do.
Oh, and that helps a reputation, too.
Absolutely,
absolutely. If you can fulfill these requirements, then other people can come to you confidently.
Yeah, so that established a really nice relationship, actually, with the creator and producer of Seventh Heaven. Her name is Brenda Hampton, mm-hmm. who later on went on to do many, many things. But also for 5 years was the showrunner for Secret Life of the American Teenager, and which was on ABC Family. Mm-hmm. And we had one of our gentlemen with Down syndrome was a regular on the show for 5 years. Mm-hmm. And we had
How old was he then?
He probably was...
That sounds familiar to me.
Yeah. And this show was... when did it come out? Like 2007, I think, is maybe when it started.
Was he a late teen?
He looked like a late teen. Yes, yeah, he was a very youthful guy. Uh-huh. He was probably in his mid-20s when mm-hmm. he started and, you know, turned 30 definitely while he was on the show because I remember his 30th birthday.
I think I saw that, yes.
So he was the adopted brother of one mm-hmm. of the teenage characters, her big brother.
Right.
But we've had a tremendous amount of success.
And it looks like everybody is on everybody's side.
You know, it is. They're just like any place else. There's competition and there's a little bit of friction. Mm-hmm. It's just...
People are people.
People are people. Right. Exactly. But when one wins in this situation, everyone wins. Mm-hmm. And that's what we tell everybody. And whenever somebody has a commercial that's been done or a music video that's been done, we put it up on the big screen in front so everybody can see and get mm-hmm. excited about mm-hmm. it. And we tell them, we say, listen, this could be you next week. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the right role at the right time for the right person. And as the actor Edward James Olmos said when he came to visit us, mm-hmm. somebody asked him, what is success? What is success?
He
said, success is when opportunity meets preparation.
Yes.
And so that's why we kick these guys' butts on a daily basis. Uh-huh. We don't coddle them. We treat them like peers. We treat them like adults. We try to instill in them the seriousness of the industry, but the fun that can be had while you're pursuing this. And it's all about the process because... You know, some of our guys are obviously never going to get cast in anything. Mm-hmm. A lot of actors in Los Angeles never get cast. They do the work, and they're lucky if they work. Mm-hmm. You know, and we let our guys know that.
But they're still part of a community that's got to have some pride to
Absolutely.
It.
And that's why we're always doing original productions. That's why we're always doing something here at the studio to be able to put them out there. Mm-hmm. And we've done fabulous large scale. We've done four full-scale large musicals. We've done a feature-length film. We've done a web series. We've done
commercials. Gets to perform.
Everybody gets to perform.
Okay, so nobody's left out. I mean,
absolutely
and people come
not.
Here from the public. They come to see these.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Okay, so it's not like anybody gets left behind.
No.
That's nice. And so the way what I could see out there was people are kind of trained and encouraged to find the best of themselves to mm-hmm, present. Mm-hmm. And aren't you lucky because that's evidently what you've gotten to do also in this, right?
It's true. And not only being able to create an environment.
I mean, you're using all parts of your talents.
Absolutely. And that was dormant for quite a bit of time mm-hmm. when I was strictly working in social services. After I kind of set the rock and roll behind me and I set the acting behind me, I said, okay, I'm kind of stuck in this social services thing. Mm-hmm. But there was always something in my head that was going, boy, this guy's wacky. This guy would be a great character actor.
Yes.
Or, my God, this person surprised me by having an amazing voice.
Oh, you know? So you just took him with you.
I have one person from the old days that is with me now. And she didn't join us until maybe a couple of years ago. But we do have one gal that is here that is part of our original five that I opened the studio with.
And tell me again, how long ago was that? Season
1998. So we're going to have our 17th anniversary coming up in June 1st.
This is just wonderful.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm so touched and impressed with
everything. You know what I was going to say? I was going to say that, you know, not only being able to create an environment for our participants, but also a place for industry professionals to, you know, who work intermittently, just like any actor, to be able to use their skills and their passion and their talent every day and be able to share that with people that are like sponges.
Oh, so this is hired for teachers?
Yeah, all our teachers are industry people.
Well, I knew that, but I just didn't realize that component of it.
Yeah.
And also, it's a very gracious group. I noticed when I came in the door, like, everybody rushed up and introduced themselves. And, you know, they're welcoming.
Yeah, they sure are.
Yeah.
They sure are.
That's very nice. Let me ask you something, because I am basically about people's stories. Mm-hmm. And I think the more we know, I mean, there's nothing we don't hear about people that we don't learn something from.
Okay.
And people who hear what you're talking about are saying, oh, well, if that exists, then I can do that. Mm-hmm. You know, I can act. I can take part in whatever I want. And I also know that every one of life's experiences has the seeds in it of a love letter to someone. Mm-hmm. I.e. a personal script about yourself and the people in your life. So if you were to write a love letter right now, and I don't know personally about you, do you have family here?
I'm married. I have a beautiful wife and beautiful stepdaughter.
Oh, nice.
Live here in Los Angeles in the Silver Lake area.
Do you write letters ever? Are you a letter writer? Did you ever used to be?
I used to be.
Sure.
I think so. I think we all used to be before the age of email and internet. But
those of us of a certain age all used to be. I mean, that was how you communicated.
Yeah.
So, and you don't anymore because there's email and...
Yeah, and phones.
Yeah. So I heard recently, and I was talking about this last night, I heard, and I don't know if you've ever heard this, but I was fascinated by it. I heard the concept is kind of out there now that it is actually rude to make a phone call.
Yeah, isn't that odd?
I think it's wonderful. I think it is. It always interrupts something.
Well, that's
You're
true.
Always doing something.
I know kids don't call each other anymore.
No.
It's always a text.
That's right.
You know, let me know when you have time.
Well, that or an email that doesn't interrupt something. You can get it when you want. I mean, you're either in the shower, you're making dinner, you're having dinner with your family,
right.
You're watching a movie, you're making love, you're doing nothing. Mm-hmm. And you want to enjoy that. And the sound of that telephone is, I think, really a jarring part of life. Mm-hmm. Letters interfere with nothing.
That's true. That's true.
So if you were to write a love letter right now, and not doesn't mean romantic necessarily, although those are nice too. Mm-hmm. Who would you write to?
My mother.
Oh, nice. You said that fast. Is she still alive?
No, she is not. Both my parents have passed. Uh-huh. But
how old were you when?
Ooh, gosh. I was in my...
I mean, was that a long time ago?
No, not too... Well, mom was... See, I'm terrible. 2003.
So you were an adult.
Sure.
And how old was she?
She was 70.
Oh, that's already too young.
Too young.
Yeah.
I mean, she had three bouts with cancer over her life. You know, and got over the first two. You know, she had breast cancer and was cancer free for many years after her surgeries. She had cancer in her kidney, had a kidney removed.
Oh my!
And was cancer free forever. Forever, forever. Traveled the world. She was, like I said, she was a special education teacher. Teacher of the year 100 times over. Mm-hmm. Beautiful sense of humor. My dad and her were just the most amazing couple ever. And then she got diagnosed with leukemia and I got her in four months. It was just bam.
Oh, my goodness.
You know,
it was awful.
Just gone.
Yeah. Is your dad still here?
My dad is gone, too. My dad passed.
Oh, you said that.
He lasted a few years after my mom was around.
Do you have siblings?
I do. I have a brother that... Who lives in the East Bay in Danville. Great wife, two great kids who live in San Francisco, adult kids.
Yeah.
And my younger brother lives in Folsom up near
Sacramento.
So you
have a lot of people to leave.
Oh, God, we got a huge family.
So you're going to write a letter to your mother.
Yes.
And I like that you say that because writing a letter to people who are gone, because they're never really gone as long as we carry them, right?
It's true.
So what do you want to tell her?
I would tell my mom.
And have you ever done it before?
I have not.
Okay, good.
I have not.
I love giving homework to people who are willing. Yes.
I would, do you want me to do it formally or can I kind of just go off there? You want me to say, dear mom?
No, well, that's a good question, because sometimes people have, you know, Dear Mom is usually it, but sometimes people have special names or, so it's going to be Dear Mom. And what do you want to say?
Yeah, I would say to her, first of all, thank you for being one of the most loving, funny, supportive, accepting people that I ever met in my life. Mm-hmm. And it was really through her and the combination of her personality and my dad's personality that molded me and my siblings, my brothers, mm-hmm. into the funny, creative, accepting yes. people that we are. Yes. I mean, there was always music in our house.
Okay, so wait. So now you're saying that as an aside. You're saying what you want to say to your mother, and then you're saying to me, you know, there was always music. Mm-hmm. That's part of the love letter.
It is.
I mean, all those...
Thank you for always having music in our house. Thank you for always having family around.
And what kind of music was it? And what did she look like?
Oh, my mother was beautiful.
I bet.
She was beautiful. She, in her older years, she looked like a cross between Lauren Bacall and Melina Mercouri, Greek actress. Uh-huh. As a young woman, she had raven black hair, and you know she was.
I think the specifics in a love letter is really what makes it. To put all those things in, you know, I remember what you look like with the raven black hair, and I mean, what did she cook, and what did her voice sound like, and what did the touch of her hand feel like? Those kind of things. Because you're a significant part of two histories here in life, mm-hmm. theater and social services. Mm-hmm. You've mm-hmm. done a lot. Mm-hmm. And the letters that you write are your own history documented in your own hand, and they'll show up in 200 years. Whereas you can store them, mm-hmm. by the way, this is just kind of a rant of mine recently. You can store them. You can do them on videos. Those will corrode in 15 and a half mm-hmm. years, mm-hmm. and you won't be able to play them on anything, even if they don't. Anything you put down on good paper in indelible ink will last probably 400 years. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that crazy?
Yes, it is still the best information storage system we have.
That's wild.
And so, who will you send it to? I mean, you're going to put it in an envelope and mail it. It's a letter.
I would send it to all my relatives who loved my mom as much as I did.
Yes. Okay. I love that.
I would send it to all my
cousins.
Dear
Mom, I'm writing this to you, but I'm going to send it to every member of the family.
Right.
And it'll end up in their treasure boxes.
Right.
And I hope you'll be able to even do just as writing your own history, partly, mm-hmm. and still bathing in the positive and the love of all this that you grew up with and still carry.
Right.
To do maybe a few letters and get so much of the history in. Maybe talk about the people you work with. And what they do and how this grew and the movies that your people have been in.
Right.
And somebody's going to find this in 100 years and have a fabulous PhD thesis out of it. Something.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yes, I think so.
You know, and it, thank you, Mom, for sharing your talent as an actress. And I'll have to do an aside on this one.
Well, you can do it, but I hope it'll be in the, yeah.
My mother was quite a talented actress. Mm-hmm. During World War II, she was scouted by a movie studio in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. That was at the time where they would go to different colleges and they'd be looking for young actresses. Mm-hmm. She was approached by someone from the industry down here. They wanted her to move to or come to Los Angeles for a screen test.
Yeah.
And her Greek parents,
uh-huh.
who immigrated, absolutely refused.
Right.
Because Hollywood was just filled with whores.
Oh, sure. Well, yes, and that kind of thing was not considered...
It wasn't considered proper.
It was less than not proper
for
a lot of people. It was frivolous, and it was... Instead of the serious beauty that it... Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think all that should go in those letters somehow.
It absolutely will. It absolutely will.
So in the future, people will learn about her and historically what things were like, mm-hmm. that a lot of the families thought it was not proper for their daughters or sons to do it. It was... Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing this with me.
Thank you, Janet. Thank you.
Yes.
It's my pleasure.
And, you know, if ever you have something else you want to tell about and share, come to another one with me.
Thank you. I'd love to.
Thank you.
To be back.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
So the choice of stationery and, you know, as I say, something real. And you're not going to handwrite 40 of them, by the way. I mean, it's just overwhelming a task. Mm-hmm. But you want to sign it. You want some actual proof that you were there.
Mm-hmm.
So your signature, and make maybe a PS. So people who get this, and by the way, people who get this 100 years from now, will know that they are touching something that's felt the touch of your hand.
Mm-hmm.
That and handwriting are just king. Okay.
Is that amazing?
That's my last little lecture.
Thank you. All right, awesome.
Until next time, and please remember that if you think you need a special occasion to write a love letter, first of all, there always is one. And secondly, writing a love letter is a special occasion, and you deserve to have the joy of it. So until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye, and
John Pazis.
Thank you.
Thanks, Janet.
Bye.